on the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. We are taking a breather from all the chaos of yesterday. I am actually recording this before all the polls close. So I imagine by the time you're listening to this on Wednesday, I don't think we'll know any of the results of the election. But nonetheless, we are moving forward and we're talking a little bit of baseball. Today, we are going to treat this as a little bit of a, hey, let's get our mind off the rest of the world for a little bit. And let's just talk about ball. We are going to talk about some comments that you may have seen from the general manager's meetings having to do with a certain Willy Adames. We'll talk on that in a moment. We'll talk about the key dates that are on the way for the rest of the calendar year and what to be ready for coming up this offseason. And we'll also talk a little bit about money, contracts, kind of see how the sausage is made when it comes to Willy Adames in particular. Again, I'm Dominic Catronio. You can follow me on Twitter, X, whatever we call it these days, at Dom, D-O-M underscore C-O-T-R-O-N-E-O. And again, if you got Brewers friends that want to make sure they stay in the loop all offseason long, right here, we've got you covered on WTMJ. Let's start with some headlines and some good news here to start off the program. First and foremost, congratulations to General Manager Matt Arnold of the Brewers as he was named Major League Baseball's Executive of the Year. And that is a award that is voted on by his peers. So essentially, the top executives of every single team vote before the postseason begins, just like, you know, the MVP award or just like the Cy Young awards or that sort of thing. They all vote at the start of the postseason who is the executive of the year. And this is kind of like, you know, a catch-all term for, hey, who did the best job with maybe you could say the least or with what was thrown at them or that sort of thing. Honestly, this seems like a no-brainer in hindsight. Yeah, of course, Matt Arnold with the year that they had and all the injuries in the starting rotation and looking like geniuses now for signing Cheerio the way they did, acquiring Brian Hudson, acquiring Jared Koenig, signing Pat Murphy in the first year of his deal. I mean, there's a scenario here in 2 weeks' time or so, we're going to know for sure, where the Brewers have both the manager of the year and the executive of the year, and they're both coming back. So if you would have told me when David Stearns left, you know, everyone was really freaking out about that at the time, you know, when he takes the leave of absence in 2023 and then ultimately goes to the Mets for the first time this full year this year. Everyone was freaking out, like, all right, well, we got Matt Arnold, so what's that going to mean after all we've heard about David Stearns over the years? Well, now Matt Arnold's entering year number 10 within the organization, and that's not by accident. And I think Matt enjoys it here. His assistants, Matt Klein comes to mind, enjoy it here. Cam Castro, so many other great, great high-up folks in the Brewers organization have stuck around. And our big reason why Matt Arnold has been awarded Executive of the Year, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Matt because he's a little busy down in San Antonio right now, but I imagine he would say something like this. This is a team award. I'm grateful to all the people that have joined on our side, that sort of thing. So congratulations to Matt Arnold. That's the first time a Brewers executive has ever won the Executive of the Year award. So once again, congratulations to him. Another headline comes from the award finalists, and another one coming up in just a moment, in that we will find out award finalists next week. It'll be next Monday is when all the finalists will be announced, and then MLB Network will have a special about it, and then throughout the coming weeks, they will announce throughout November who wins what, and they, you know, drag it out, they make it a made-for-TV event and that sort of thing. So next Monday, we'll find out officially, all right, Pat Murphy will be Manager of the Year nomination. We'll learn that Jackson Churio will be a Rookie of the Year nomination. We'll learn more about, you know, we don't think a Brewer is going to be top three in MVP voting, obviously, but once we know the date that the MVP will be announced, then we'll get to see the down ballot voting of something we talked about a couple episodes ago. And then finally, we also have the Silver Slugger nominations too. And most notably on this is the fact that Jackson Churio can become the youngest player ever to win a Silver Slugger award. There have only been one other 20-year-old to have won a Silver Slugger, and that was Fernando Valenzuela as a pitcher. He was 20 years and 338 days. Churio is younger than that, by the way. He's I think he's just shy of 300 days. His birthday's in March, so that would be well under 300 days now that I think about it out loud. But he would be the youngest ever to be a Silver Slugger. Now, Chirio's not the only nominee, and of course he is an outfield nominee, so it's just based on outfield, not by position. The fellow finalists are Teoscar Hernandez, Jackson Merrill, Jurickson Profar, and Seiya Suzuki. So it's just outfield in general in the National League. So it's Jackson Chirio, Willie Adames, of course, and William Contreras. Of course, William Contreras won it last year. He became the first Brewer catcher to win a Silver Slugger Award. Yep, Lucroy never did, which is just a wild sentence to say. But nonetheless, three nominees for Silver Slugger. And then the last headline we'll get to here at the top of the show, and we have some audio to play with this too, is the Brewers have two Gold Glove winners in 2024. Sal Frelick in right field and Bryce Tarang at second base. Blake Perkins did not win in center field. He was nominated. It went to Brenton Doyle of the Colorado Rockies. And while we're on that subject, before we get over to Sal and to Bryce, Sal had some very strong words about how he feels about Blake Perkins and how great of a season he had.
Like you said, if you're a finalist, I think you're up there and you should deserve to win. I think it's kind of a coin flip, really. Blake, obviously, in my opinion, is the best center fielder in baseball, and we get to see it every single day. But not only do I think he's the best at his position, but I just can't say enough how much he's helped me. You hear about these, like, you know, pregame routines and guys, how they get ready for the game. And I've always had a routine for, you know, hitting, what I do in the cage, but I never really had one for defense until I met Blake and until he came over and joined our club. And I was in Nashville with him, watching him every day pregame go through this routine defensively, and he never skipped it. And I kind of just talked to him about that and kind of got on board with it and started doing it every day. And I can't thank him enough for just being an older guy who's been around the game for a long time. And yeah, and that's why he's so good. And I saw that early and was like, man, I really want to be able to go after balls like Blake does and has his route so clean. And it's just from all the work he did in that routine he has. So yeah, I just kind of modeled that after him.
Gotta love the teammates sticking up for one another. But let's talk a little bit about these guys here before we get into some other Willie Adames stuff later on here in the program. Talking about the years that these guys had, the advanced numbers obviously love them too. But I think what's most important, and sometimes Gold Glove folks can get really wound up, myself included, about the voting process and how it's coaches and assistant coaches that vote on it. And it's like, look, with respect to the Brewers coaches, and I think they understand when I say this, is that you're rarely watching the other team. You're getting scouting reports and you're getting ideas. All right, I can't run on this guy, or hey, this guy's going to be shaded over to this side. Like, you don't get to watch them on a daily basis, and it's really hard to judge. It's a really, really difficult thing to measure, because we've talked about it plenty over the last year or so and over on the YouTube channel as well. Defensive metrics are messy and they're not perfect. There are multiple calculations to this. One metric can say you're incredible, above average. Another metric can say you're league average. And then you see the odd requirements, like minimum innings played by position. And then there's some scar tissue, too, of the old Gold Glove days when it was really all coaches voting and they didn't know. Like, when seasons were, like, players that didn't exactly play the majority of their games at that position suddenly got that position, or the rumors that you have to be a good enough hitter to win a Gold Glove. Like, all that stuff's getting better. It's still not a perfect process, but nonetheless, I think the voters, at least in the Brewers ones, got it right. But then you sit and laugh and chuckle about the fact that, like, wait, Juan Soto was a Gold Glove finalist in right field in the American League? Are we serious? But then it's like, okay, you're really going to get wound up about it because there's so many platoons in baseball, and it's harder to find a guy that's played the minimum number of innings, and that could be a whole other podcast for another day. But nonetheless, the Brewers have two of them. It's the first time the Brewers have had multiple Gold Glove Award winners in the same season since 1979. And you may have seen this trivia bit earlier, but now you can impress your friends with it. Who are those two guys? Just think to yourself for a second. 1979, I'm sure a lot of people listening weren't alive when 1979 came around. Sixto Lescano and Cecil Cooper. Those were the two guys that won the Gold Glove back in 1979. So congrats to Bryce and congrats to Sal. Let's start with Sal Frelick. And just, this was the quote to me, and it made it into everyone's recap, to Rosiak's recap, to McAlvey's recap, that, hey, there's an identity and there is a pride in playing defense for the Milwaukee Brewers. Here's what Sal had to say about it.
I also think that just, like, the identity of our team the past few years. I mean, since I got drafted, there's always been pitching and defense. And I think you kind of just take pride in that when you throw on the Brewer uniform and you take the field knowing that is our identity. So, you know, I think we have great staff too that put us in great positions. But, you know, like I said, I do think that is, you know, kind of the culture of our organization. And we just take pride in that as a player.
Furthermore, with Bryce, I asked him early in the press conference, you know, obviously his dad played in the big leagues and his dad has helped him along the way. His dad got a cup of coffee in the show. That's really cool. But he's got older sisters who bounced around. He's got a soccer background. He's got a whole bunch going on growing up. But nonetheless, he still had time to find chances to watch one of his favorite players. And I thought this was a perfect comparison as to it makes all the sense in the world why Bryce Durang is such an elite defender.
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't really grow up much watching baseball just because my sisters were always playing sports. So I was always traveling and watching them. But I mean, when Andrelton Simmons was with the Angels, you know, watching him, Troy Tulowitzki, you know, that like those are the guys that like you kind of hear about and you watch them. And, you know, I saw a lot of Andrelton Simmons like firsthand because I was there. I was watching those games in Anaheim. And that was when I would go to those games. You know, it was very, very often because I was so busy growing up. But yeah, those are kind of the guys. But my dad, you know, my dad's helped me out a ton in the infield, obviously kind of been there, done that. And so he's just teaching me what he knows.
And sticking with Bryce here, one of my favorite things about this whole press conference was my last question to these guys was I wanted them to talk about each other. And I said, Bryce, when was the time that you realized that Sal Frelick was a Gold Glove caliber and vice versa? Sal, when did you realize Bryce Durang was Gold Glove caliber? So here's Sal's answer on how impressed he always has been with Bryce Durang.
Yeah, I think it's fun too that we're on the same side of the field just because I get to see the exact same thing. And when I first started playing with Bryce, especially last year when I came up, like we had some shift on and I was just like, there's just like Bryce is so deep in the hole and Willie's deep in his hole. And like the whole middle of the field's open. Like, what are we doing? And someone will hit it there. And somehow Bryce gets the ball. And I used to just charge from right because I'm like, I'm going to have to field this ground ball and throw a guy out. But now I kind of know that I don't have to charge any ball hit on the ground to the right side. But it's so fun watching him. And I see Jason Lane during the first round of BP every day just smack balls at Bryce at second. He did it every single game, not one game he didn't. I mean, he's hitting them hard. Like, this is after they already take ground balls during batting practice. And he's hitting them, you know, line drives up the middle everywhere. And Bryce takes 10 grounders like that at game speed. And then you get to the game and he'll get one or two and he makes the play. So it's like, I can just see everything that he puts into it and you know why he's so good. It's really, it's just not, you know, obviously as gifted as he is. It's a lot of hard work.
And then on the other side of that equation, Bryce and Sal had a funny moment when Bryce, wait, you were playing center? This is what he had to say about why Sal Frelick was certainly deserving of a Gold Glove.
From my views, I see kind of what goes into it. And the head snap and play in Arizona was an unreal catch. I think that was, I might be wrong, but was that to start the game off or something like that?
Yeah.
To start the game off in the first inning or whatever, he makes a play like that. And you're like, oh my gosh, like he's just fearless. He just goes into those walls like, and he catches them. It's very impressive. And then you see him coming in and diving for balls and stuff like that. But that one play in Arizona, I was like, oh my gosh. And he's had plenty more too, where he's running into the gaps, diving, laying out. I think there was one in center. Did you play? Was that you in center that you caught that ball over your shoulder diving?
Yeah, I think Kutch hit it.
Yeah, that was sweet.
So once again, congratulations to both of those two guys. And I love the quote earlier about Perk, certainly one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. So that was one of the big headlines from earlier this week. Enjoy that for the guys. And let's get a few more next season, eh? They were the team Gold Glove winners last year, despite not having a Gold Glove winner. But now they'll certainly be a candidate once again in 2024 and into 2025. Okay, let's all take a breath. Let's shift gears. Let's get real for a second and let's talk about Willy Adames. We've talked about it plenty. I've made my stance very clear. I'm going to be shocked if he comes back. Very shocked, quite frankly. Not just because it's not saying like, oh, he doesn't want to come back. That's not the case. In fact, we got confirmation That's not the case in the slightest this week. But furthermore, it's a matter of dollars and cents. So let me just go straight to the quotes. This is courtesy of The Athletic. Will Salmon, old friend, used to cover the Brewers for The Athletic. And Katie Wu, who stays in the NL Central. She covers the Cardinals on the beat basis, but she is down in San Antonio covering the general manager meetings. This was a quote from Willie Adames talking about the fact that, like, could he stay and what would he do to stay? Quote from Willie, "I'm willing to stay here for less money, let's say, but I just want to be fair for what I deserve in my career and what I've done. We just have to wait and see where we're at. You never know what's going to happen, and you never know who's going to be willing to make that commitment with me, Willie, for a long time." Katie and Will then continued to write on. It sounded like a nice sentiment, but the reality is that Adames likely ends up elsewhere. Adames is 29, coming off of a strong offensive season at a premium position. In the spring, The Athletic's Tim Britton projected Adames' upcoming free agent deal at 5 years, $120 million, but Adames' performance has pushed that projection to 6 years and $150 million. With all that being said, it would be cool to have him back. And I know Brewers fans are sick of hearing the small market stuff and all of those conversations that come with that. And Brewers fans understand you have to operate on the margins. And quite frankly, I'm sure there's a handful of Brewers fans that don't even want him back. And I think they're wrong. There's no such thing as a perfect player. But nonetheless, Willie has put it out there like, hey, I'd stay for a little less money. But I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean, there are multiple big market teams that are going to be looking for him. And that's also talked about in this article. I don't want to just read the article verbatim here. If you subscribe to The Athletic, you should. And if you don't, there's like a $1 promo code somewhere I could find. Or if you already subscribed to The New York Times, you probably already have it in your subscription. But anyway, the Dodgers are going to be the obvious one that come up a lot this offseason. We're going to see a lot about, I imagine, the San Francisco Giants are going to make a call about Willie Adames. I imagine maybe somebody that is completely out of left field that we're not anticipating is going to, you know, kick the tires on Willie Adames. A Boston Red Sox, I don't know, right? I'm just naming big market teams. You know, the teams that I don't see doing it are the Phillies, obviously. They got Trey Turner. The Yankees, I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to stick with Anthony Volpe. I don't see the Braves doing it. They've got Arcia for one more year, and they got to save all that money to pay Max Fried. I see the Dodgers, I see the Giants being competitive in this market, and then maybe a team like the Red Sox comes up out of nowhere, but we know how the Red Sox have spent money over the last few years. With that being said, what would a potential contract actually look like for Willie Adames? Let's pipe dream for a second, okay? Let's put on our DeLulu hats if you're young and if you're Gen Z, and if I made you cringe, I apologize. But let's be real for a second. What would it look like? What do we think the contract that Willie Adames is going to get? And this is not factoring in like, oh, hometown discount, that sort of thing. For a long time, I thought he was going to be getting like 7-8 years, given how young he is, buyout his prime. You know, maybe you get a lower AAV because you're getting a longer term commitment. But it seems, just from reading all the articles that I read today, that everyone's kind of in agreement on the 5 to 6 year range, which I thought was a little surprising, but maybe that's more of a reflection of the way that baseball economics are working these days, with the TV money being so uncertain and the big premium free agents like Willie Adames. You know, a lot of shortstop shops have been tied up over the last few years. Lindor with the Mets, Turner with the Phillies. Then you go with like Correa with the Twins. And then you look at Seager with the Rangers, and more on the Rangers in a moment. But you know, some of the marquee guys have already been locked up. So this is the next tier of guys, Willie Adames being one of them. What's he going to get? And a few AAVs, average annual values, came to mind when I sat down to do my research for what would a Adames contract look like. The first one that came to mind was Trevor Story with the Boston Red Sox, a 6-year deal averaging at about $23.3 million a year. I think he's going to get paid more than Trevor Story because the best ability is availability. And that is what Willie Adames has been for his entire career. With respect to Trevor Story, he does not have that ability. Next, Javier Baez, the exact same AAV. I mean, we're talking about Javier Baez coming off of hip surgery that ended his season short. Then the Tigers go on a run without him. And they're talking about maybe eating the money on him this offseason. Okay, that's a wild sentence to say about Javier Baez. I think they're completely different players. The next one, I think this is the most interesting one. Dansby Swanson. Dansby Swanson is averaging $25.2 million in average annual value. That contract with the Cubs is over a seven-year period for $177 million. Now, he and Willy Adames are hitting free agency at the same age, 29 years old. With that being said, they're a few days apart. Dansby was slightly younger, but this is where we're splitting hairs. He was a college hitter, made his debut faster, that sort of thing. Man, like when you just do like an easy baseball reference, compare these two players, any kid with an internet account is going to say, oh yeah, Willy Adames should get paid more money. It doesn't work like that. You got to find multiple people that are willing to meet in the middle of like, hey, we want to pay you this much money. So 25.2 being in mind, I imagine Willie's representation is saying, you got to beat that in the AAV. And I wouldn't blame them for that. He wants to be the leader of that next tier of shortstop pay. He's not going to get 300, 200 mil like a Lindor, like a Turner, like a Seager, like a Correa. I tell you what, the Correa deal is going to age very poorly with the current rate that he's on right now. But nonetheless, he's going to be that next tier, that B tier of like, all right, well, those are the A's. What does the BB plus tier look like? And if he can make more money, average annual value to, like we said in the article, like given what he's worth, if you were to stay with the Brewers, he'd be the highest paid shortstop in the Central. But with that being said, here are the projections, or at least the predictions from a few writers that I trust on what Willy Adames' contract could look like. FanGraphs put him at 5 years for $145 million, which I don't think 5 years he's going to fly with that, which would be a $29 million average annual value. Again, I don't think any team's going to sign up for that for 5 years. Furthermore, I don't think Willie's going to sign for 5 years, and I don't think a team is going to commit to $29 million a year for 5 years. So that one, I think, is off the books. MLB Trade Rumors, they do a solid job in this sort of area. I don't take it as gospel. They put 6 years, $160 million, which would be $26.6 million, which is more than Dansby Swanson. I could see that happening. Six for 160, very, very interesting. The Athletic, Jim Bowden, he put 6 years for $150 million, so taking off $1.6 million per year annually brings him down to $25 million, which is, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars a year less than Dansby Swanson. Maybe you can adjust the total value. Maybe it goes up to 155, 157, so he has more AAV than Dansby. But again, I think I start at that $25 million mark and go up from there. Next was ESPN's Kylie McDaniel. He put 7 years, $189 million, which is a $27 million annual. So that's the highest annual aside from FanGraphs, but he has longer years. And the largest guarantee there, of course, too. This is a deal that the Dodgers would do because they've got that kind of money. Obviously not a deal that the Brewers would do. Nonetheless, I wanted to compare maybe someone similar, someone that got some cash from a team that we didn't expect to give some cash, those Texas Rangers. And I'm not talking about Corey Seager. I'm talking about Marcus Semien. Marcus Semien was originally a shortstop, then eventually moved over to second base. His defensive woes were well documented when he first went to the Oakland A's in a trade from the White Sox to the A's. Could always hit. Defense was a struggle. They brought back Ron Washington to help him get right. He wins a gold glove. So Marcus Semien is an interesting case for a couple of reasons. He became a free agent after the 2020 season. So pandemic, economic factors, lockout factors on the way. There's a lot to figure out for Semien, meaning he had to take a one-year flyer in his first free agency season with the Toronto Blue Jays. He signed for 1 year with the Blue Jays, got a prove-it $18 million check. He proved it. Then the Rangers called that following offseason and gave him the deal that he currently signed, which is a seven-year 175 guarantee, which averages out to $25 million a year. So again, Kylie McDaniel predicted for Adames 7 years at 27. Semien got 7 years at 25. Different positions, and the production is really going to shock you here. When you look at heading into the full free agency for Marcus Semien. So this is before his Blue Jays year, before the prove it year. So I understand folks saying, well, he got an extra year to prove it. That's why I'm not including 2021 stats in this. So this is his first seven seasons as a big leaguer with a cup of coffee in his first year. Marcus Semien was a super two. So here are the numbers. Marcus Semien versus Willy Adames, their first seven seasons. When it comes to baseball reference war, Marcus Semien, 21.7. Willy Adames, 21.5. 0.2 of a win difference. The same. Mind you, Marcus Semien, a year and a half older than Willy Adames at this point, too. Furthermore, Fangraphs war, F war. Marcus Semien, 15.7. Willy Adames, 21.3. So that's a plus 5.6 or so. Five more wins on Fangraphs war. Okay, let's go further down on the offense here. OPS plus and WRC plus. Both of these numbers are exactly the same. For Semien, 105. For Adames, 109. So 4 points better than Semien, both of them above league average. Next, WOBA, weighted on base average. Both of them above league average. Semien, 322. Adames at 329. And once again, Semien was older, did not play shortstop, and was signed as a free agent after a prove-it year. So he got the 1 year of 18 mil, and then he got the long-term deal. So essentially, he got 8 years for $193 million, if you want to include Blue Jays and Rangers in that deal. Now, I don't think that's going to happen for Willy Adames, but that's where I think the conversation begins for Willy. We talked about Swanson, and we now talk about Marcus Semien. If somebody really wants to blow him away, it's a Marcus Semien-type contract because they had very, very, very similar production. And you could argue, Willie a better hitter, better power hitter, more extra base hits, better slugging percentage, better overall OPS, not the league-adjusted numbers like I gave you there. Nonetheless, someone's going to be able to pay that. Are the Brewers going to be able to pay that? I don't think so. And here's another reason to remember. Well, Dom, how about they defer the money? Why don't they do like they did with Shohei Ohtani and defer as much money as they can? The Brewers have deferred money contracts in the past. They did so with Lorenzo Cain. They did so with Matt Garza. And they're doing so right now with Christian Yelich. Remember, Yelly has $28 million deferred on his contract right now, which helps the average annual value of the deal be a little bit lower because they're going to pay him at least $2 million a year once his deal is up. I believe it starts in 2031, and then it goes to 2042. Based on that deferment and based on the option and that sort of thing. But the Brewers are already have deferred money in place for Yelly's contract. Would they be willing to do it again for Willie's contract? I'd be surprised. And furthermore, if you sign Willy Adames to a six-year deal, he is now outlasting Christian Yelich's deal. Think about that. Yelly signs ahead of 2020. We did not know what the rest of that year would entail or the back surgery or anything like that. But all of a sudden, you have Adames still getting the brunt of his AAV while you're starting the deferred payments on Christian Yelich when he's no longer a Brewer. So that's another reason why I think the Brewers would be hesitant, in addition to the actual sticker shock of the price that it could be to retain Willy Adames. So I hope that all makes sense as I threw a bunch of numbers here at you, but it's going to be tough. I think you know that. I think the Brewers front office knows that. I think Mark Adonasio knows that, and that's okay. The Brewers have seen high-profile free agents walk out the door. And again, the wild stat to me is the Brewers' largest free agent contract is still Lorenzo Cain's. Christian Yelich is technically not a free agent contract because he still had 1 year of control, and it was an extension. So that's wild to me. They would break a record if they so choose. But crazier things have happened. You never, ever know. But we'll find out more. So let's get ready to wrap things up here with the thoughts of what to be prepared for the rest of the offseason. And we'll talk again live next week back on WTMJ, back on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. So obviously today's been recorded. We'll finally be able to get some texts, get some calls, get some fan interaction in on next week's episode too. But let's talk about the key dates that are on the way. November 19th is the qualifying offer deadline. So 2 weeks from Tuesday is saying, hey, I'm taking the qualifying offer or I'm not. Now, this applies to Willy Adames. He's not going to take the qualifying offer, which opens the door for the Brewers to receive a compensation draft pick if he signs elsewhere. Now, if he stays put, you know, if he rejects a qualifying offer and then stays put with the Brewers, there's no draft pick, obviously. You kept Willy Adames, so man can dream. So that comes November 19th. Also on November 19th is the reserve 40-man deadline. That is the deadline to place players from your minor league organizations onto your 40-man roster to protect them from the Rule 5 draft, right? We saw this a couple years ago with Abner Uribe. We saw this last year with Carlos Rodriguez and Jefferson Caro and that sort of thing. We'll have a better preview of that once we get closer to that date, maybe in next week's episode. But there are a handful of guys that you're going to keep an eye on, and part of the reason why the Brewers made the moves they made this week. More on that in just a moment as we get ready to wrap up the show. The non-tender deadline is November 22nd. This is when you basically decide for arbitration eligible players or non-arbitration eligible, but you rarely do it to non-arbitration guys that say, we're not tendering you a contract. Especially guys that have options or guys that are making league minimum, you don't need to do it to those guys. However, you know, the arbitration guys, I think the only one that really comes to mind right off the bat would be, what are they going to do with Aaron Civale? I think they're going to keep Aaron Civale personally, but that's something they have to decide to do in the arbitration process. Arbitration doesn't really begin until January. Like, that's when the deadline is, and all of that action happens in the first couple of weeks of the new calendar year. So we'll talk more about arbitration when that point comes, but the non-tender deadline, again, November 22nd, which leads us to the winter meetings, December 8th through the 11th. And that's where a lot of trades, I imagine that's where Juan Soto is going to get signed, and then that's going to create a domino effect of everybody else getting signed. And then finally, the Rule 5 draft on December 11th, that's where you can acquire a player from somebody else's minor league system, put them on your big league team, and then see what happens. We also see a flurry of activity right before that. And we also see a flurry of activity right before the reserve deadline, too, for players that aren't going to be protected on the other team's 40-man, and then you can acquire them. That's how the Brewers acquired Oliver Dunn last year. I know he got hurt, and there were some moments of brilliance, moments of not so brilliance, but that's how they acquired Oliver Dunn from the Phillies last year. So all that being said, the options that happened on Monday with the options deadline, you know, the mutual options and everything that we talked about last week when it comes to the roster structure. So right now, the 40-man roster sits at 36 because you have to activate all of your 60-day IL guys back onto your 40-man roster. You can't just keep a guy on the 60-day IL all the way through the offseason. They have to then be placed back on the 60-day IL on opening day in 2025. So here are the departures for the Brewers that exited the 40-man roster. Colin Ray, as the Brewers declined their end of the club option, he is now a free agent. Frankie Montas, he declined his end of the mutual option. He got a buyout as well, so he's a free agent. Kevin Hergett was claimed off waivers. I tweeted it was the Yankees. It's actually the Mets. That was a typo from the Brewers folks. We're all human. Then it was Rob Zastrzyzny claimed off waivers by the Cubs. Jake Bowers was outrighted to AAA, and because of his service time, he is able to be a free agent. And Bryce Wilson was outrighted to AAA, both clearing waivers and thus also a free agent. So those six departures created the spots for the 60-day IL guys to be activated onto the 40-man roster. Christian Yelich, Robert Gasser, Oliver Dunn, Brandon Woodruff, and then Wade Miley already declined the mutual option, so he's not in the organization anymore, and that sort of thing. So they've added all the 60-man guys, and now have to figure out, do they want to keep Colin Ray? Do they feel like they can get him for cheaper than that $5.5 billion team option? I don't think they're going to be participating in the Montas sort of conversation. And then furthermore, you got to figure out the health of some of your relievers. What are you going to do with Devin Williams? And the last piece here about Devin Williams is this. The Brewers declined the team option, so they had to pay him $250,000 for that buyout. He's not technically a free agent. With that being said, they're going to take him to arbitration, it seems, and try to save $1 to $2 million. And I understand the headline that that looks like, and I understand why some folks would be annoyed by that and why Devin would be annoyed by that. I think it's a totally fair criticism. But if the expectation is that you're going to trade him, if you're going to save a couple bucks, that's what you're going to do. If they're not going to trade him, they're going to try to save a couple bucks, and we'll see what happens. But He's not a free agent. I saw some folks trying to lead you some misinformation with that. No, he is not a free agent. Devin Williams is still in his final year of arbitration right now. Now, he can be traded before arbitration ends or before the arbitration settlement is reached. But nonetheless, it is going to be something to monitor from now through the winter meetings to decide, okay, do the Brewers have a deal in place to trade Devin Williams? And we'll talk about that more in a future episode. Okay, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Again, tell your friends, Brewers All Access, the podcast feed. We're live again next Thursday night. That will be at 8 o'clock on WTMJ. You can follow me on social at Dom_Cotroneo. A lot of more off-season topics to talk about than maybe I was anticipating, but we'll keep getting to it throughout this fall and winter. Again, thank you for listening, and until next time, keep on swinging.